Hi, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 20. We'll be discussing episodes 11 and 12 of Veronica Mars, and those are Silence of the Lamb and Clash of the Tritons. With me here, I have Mitch, Caitlin, and Gabrielle. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Veronica Mars time, y'all.
It's been a while.
It's a good time when it's Veronica Mars time, I'll tell you that.
Veronica Mars time all the time.
Please, I went out and I'm feeling the pain of when I can't watch more than the episodes that I'm on. It's absolutely horrific. And I think I feel worse for the last people on the last episode because they had to stop right after the Aaron Eccles father gets stabbed. I was just like, whoa. But I'd say we have arguably a almost as heightened up spoiler-y ending to our episode. So we'll save that to the end so we'll get people listening all the way through, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, it's fabulous. I love it. It's so feisty.
I'm kind of excited to record this so then I can go and watch the next four episodes.
Oh, me too. That's
it's
how I always
like
feel.
2 weeks.
I know. I'm in the withdrawal right now. All right. Let's do it so we can just like go watch and marathon as soon as we get through with this.
All right. Let's do it to it. Okay. So the first episode that we watch for this episode of the podcast is Episode 11, Silence of the Lamb. And here's just a quick rundown of what happened. In this episode, we find Keith helping Sheriff Lamb with the E String Strangler case. Spoiler, the guitar guy, Gabe, did it. While Veronica helps her peers dig up dirt on their parents. This results in life-changing information for her friend Mac when Mac finds out that she was switched at birth with Madison Sinclair and the introduction of Deputy Leo as a romantic interest for Veronica also happens.
Mm.
Ah.
He's cute.
I love him.
I really liked him. He was sweet. He had such a Styles from Teen Wolf feel to him, but he also reminded me of the guy from New Girl. That looks a lot like him too. If anyone watches that show, I'm sure anyone who does knows what I'm talking about.
Mitch, that is him.
Oh, shut up.
That is him.
That's funny. Oh, my God.
Were you being serious?
Yeah, I was legitimately serious. I thought that he just looked a lot like him.
Well, good reason.
Wow, that's funny.
Right. So he actually is Schmidt on New Girl, and I knew him as Schmidt before I had watched.
I can't believe that I just really, like, didn't put two and two together. Oh, that's
funny.
Hey,
I'm sure you're not the only one.
Okay. Well, here, there we go. We got our first guest star of the episode out there.
For all Veronica Mars fans, because I'm not, but I think he's an interesting...
And he's just so amiable. I love the way he talks to her. It's so sweet. He wants to get to know her and just chat it up, you know what I mean?
I didn't like him.
No, you didn't, Caitlin? Why not?
I thought he came across as sleazy. Like, there's just something about the timbre of his voice that came across as sleazy to me. I really was like set uneasy when he was around.
Like in the sleazy in the same vein as Troy even, or like different?
I guess different. Just I just didn't trust his motivations at all. I can't explain it. It was just how he spoke. It just seemed like he was not trustworthy at all. I kept thinking that he was the killer for the entire episode.
Yeah, I felt like he
was
our biggest red
herring. I don't trust
you.
I'm like, I don't trust you. There's something about you. I don't like you. And then he turned out not to be. I'm like, I still don't like you. There's just something about you.
I don't blame you. I can see where you're coming from because he did come off as sketchy because he was like Dewey from Scream 1 where you're supposed just believe he's this really dumb cop, and then there's suspicion thrown on him, and it's believable because he seems like he's playing it dumb.
That's like, come see my band. Ooh,
I know, and she did.
You are so sketchy. I did not like him,
but he seems legit so far. Like, he had a sketchy moment when he went with Papa Mars into the guitar shop at night, because right then and there, I said, you can turn good or bad right here to the viewer. You are either going to reveal you're the killer and sneak around and attack Papa Mars while he's in the dark, or you're going to help Papa Mars. And thank God he did, because it helped me look like this adorable guy a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought he was super sweet. And I also thought, I mean, I liked him even when he was like, how old are you to Veronica? And he was kind of surprised about her age. I thought that was cute because he obviously likes her.
Yeah.
But by the end of the episode, he's aware of her reputation and he still is willing to talk to her.
He's the new guy, you know? He's new in town. He doesn't know about these Marses.
He was the new guy before he was on the new girl.
Oh, shut up. I was going to say that. Oh, that's funny.
I felt bad for him when he was so like, well, I can't say Veronica I wasn't
You were speaking, Caitlin?
Okay. I felt bad for him when he was like, well, I can't say I wasn't warned, but for the rest of the time I was going, I don't trust you.
I think that in the end of the episode that we were to see Veronica as not the protagonist, but as the antagonist, because she was doing a good thing, but in a bad way. And she was sneaking around and it finally caught up to her. And she realized that too. I know you guys were talking about her being the antagonist of sorts in some certain episodes. And it was just really depressing to see her have something good and ruin it for herself because she cared more about the job than she cared about her personal life. But in the end of the day, I think he's going to be around because I think she needs a love interest the size of him, the likes of him.
What do you say, Gabrielle?
I was just saying, do you guys think she actually likes him or do you think she was just using him to get that tape?
Oh, yeah. She has to like him. I think she does because she had that monologue in the end where she was saying, girl likes boy, girl, girl uses boy, girl actually falls for boy, boy finds out and gets mad, angry at girl. And I think that she wouldn't have had that monologue if she didn't really mean it because she has no reason to lie to the audience. She's a pretty good narrator.
Yeah. She looks pretty guilty when he called her out on using him too. Like she looked visibly upset.
I agree. So then, if we didn't think it was Lam, who else did our suspicion get thrown to in this episode? Not Lam, sorry. If we didn't think it was
Leo.
Thank you. If we didn't think it was Leo, who do we think was the killer? Because we had a couple suspects in here and it was fun.
Yeah, we had quite a few. We had, I mean, obviously Gabe was a little strange.
The guitar shop owner who joked and threw off the policeman by saying, hey, did you kill anyone this week? Fishhook or whatever that guy's name was.
Oh, the old guy in the corner with the guitar.
And he's like, no.
I don't think so.
Oh, that was funny. And then, of course, we had a fabulous guest star in this episode. I couldn't believe it. I was just so excited.
You can go ahead and say who it was.
I was waiting. I was like, Danielle's going to say it.
No, you got it.
Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. He plays Jesse on Breaking Bad. He's a fabulous actor. I know he's won Grammys? No, that's singing.
That's music.
He's
maybe
won
Emmys?
I don't know. There you go. Or at least he's been nominated or something. He's great.
Yeah.
And when I saw him open up the door when Papa Mars and Officer Lam knocked on it, I just squeed. I probably woke up on my roommates. It was like 1 a.m. and I just was like, he is just so damn cute. And I love that he was still the same kind of skeezy Jesse character. But he had redeeming qualities to him because he was still legit. Like, he was still videoing girls, but he wasn't the killer, you know?
Yeah, he was creepy in a different way. Good in a different way.
No, I know. What was his name in the show? I remember he had a really weird name, too. It was like Dirty Dan or something.
It was Eddie the Worm.
Ew. That just sounds grossly phallic.
I mean, with good reason, I guess.
Yeah. Oy, yeah. But hey, wasn't that smart when Papa Mars was like, oh, we can't scare him off too much. He's going to delete the evidence. I was like, oh, Papa Mars, always thinking.
Yeah, I like when he gets to jump back into the uniform. And it kind of shows about how good of a sheriff he was. Like, it wasn't just like his job. Like, he was good at it before the whole Kane murder case went down.
Yeah, I know. And it makes me sad that he is only in this one episode a cop, because I think that this new energy we saw in him and this search for truth and justice was different than when he is as a PI. Because as a PI, he's able to kind of bend the truth with, like, when he was not telling the authorities about Rain the runaway. But in a cop position, he seems like he's in his mode and he knows that he just has to follow the law and he's good at it, you know?
Yeah. And I think he also makes I mean, obviously, I think this is what they were going for, but he makes Sheriff Lamb just look awful.
Yeah, it also gives credence to him, like, we didn't see the initial investigation into Lily's murder, but we saw the aftermath, so it gives us as the audience a little more credence to his findings that got him kicked out, so
right.
It helps us believe him more.
Right, by exactly. Saying that he was actually a legitimate cop and a legitimate stand-up guy.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And that he just didn't just jump into things, like Mitch said, like he didn't immediately arrest the guy or scare him. He thinks things out. So yeah, it definitely gives more credence to what he did with the Kane case.
Yeah, I agree.
I was just going to say, like, since we're talking about how good of a detective and Sheriff Keith is, what do we think of Sheriff Lamb and his interactions with Veronica and Keith? It just seems, even if he is a good cop, which I think he's, you know, a semi-decent one, it just seems like he's way out of line and really inappropriate how he interacts with this 17-year-old girl.
He sinks to her level. It's like, you need more maturity if you're going to be in charge of police investigation. Stop being on the level with a teenager.
Yeah, for real. And I like what he does in the upcoming episode that we're going to talk about, because he just treats her in a way that no one of authority should to anyone that is a potential delinquent, because it's just going to end up, you know, really screwing over, I think, everyone in the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then yeah. If we're talking about Lamb, I think it's only natural to talk about anything we might have found about our alleged Lily killer. Did we find out anything more about him in this episode?
I don't think so. Did we?
No, maybe that was the next, but we talked. No, go ahead.
We just found out that Clarence Weedman was the one who was taking pictures of Veronica. And at the end of this episode, she sends pictures to him.
Right.
With his son, like, in, you know, kind of a shotgun circle, and himself in a shotgun circle. And you see him visibly freaking out and wanting to know who sent it.
How creepy, though, right? The Veronica wouldn't even do that. It's a bit disturbing.
I mean, it just seems like, I understand her desire to find Lily's killer, because it's her best friend, and it's obviously kind of wrecked her family's life. But that, again, it's sinking to someone else's level that bothers me a bit. I don't know. Does it bother anyone else, like, how she interacts or how she responds to him doing that?
It's dangerous. Yes,
it's like an eye for an eye type of thing that we see her do kind of often, I feel. But this one was just, I understand that he shouldn't have been stalking and that she was right to be upset about it, but I don't know if her sending him photos to get him back on her tail was probably the best idea.
I wonder if she had really any other kind of recourse that she could have taken, though, because who's going to take a 17-year-old girl, the 17-year-old daughter of the disgraced sheriff, seriously? Mm-hmm. So she has to sink to a certain level just to be taken seriously, because she's not going to let the matter lie.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And it was in the past episode where she discovered how to see who, what, when, where, why was taking pictures of her. And I'm excited to see where this Clarence Weedman storyline leads off to, because there are a lot of ways this could lead off. It feels like there's an all-out war being brewed up between Clarence and Veronica, you know? And the fact that she was with his son and another man, I can't place my finger on who he was, but I know we've seen him in Veronica Mars before. Who was he? Do you guys remember who I'm talking about in one of the pictures? He was like a thin man. He was like in his mid-40s.
Jake Kane.
Was it Jake?
It was probably Jake Kane,
his boss.
Do we just not see
his boss, Jake Kane.
So we just don't really see too much of Duncan's father that I wouldn't really know him right now, because I don't think we've seen him in like 4 episodes, right?
Yeah, he doesn't pop up often. Like, he's had conversations with Duncan. Or we saw him during the Christmas episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course we did. Oh, what was I talking about? Nichols Family Christmas. He had a very big scene in that. So, yeah, I'm interested all to see how he feels toward the potential biological daughter that is threatening his security guard. It's just a whole bunch of weird dynamics going on there, you know?
Oh, yeah. it's complicated. It's definitely complicated.
Mm-hmm. So what do we think about Mac, guys? She's back. That's what I had to say. Mac is back.
Mac is back.
Mac is back. Line. Back again. Oh, if only Karen was on. She loves Eminem.
Not a fan, Caitlin?
I just felt like this entire episode was super disjointed. Like, okay. It was bothering me. Yeah. Like, I just wasn't getting good. Like, it didn't feel balanced between the two storylines because they were such opposites. And I get seeing, you know, that Veronica's not always going to be doing something with her father. So I get it, but they just didn't feel like two well-matched cases to be in the same episode. So I just felt very like I was having whiplash between the two storylines. Okay. So it made the episode feel very uneven for me.
I agree. I agree with that statement. Rewatching it, because I have seen it before, although I liked the episode and I liked each storyline, and seeing Aaron Paul is always, you know, a nice thing to see. I didn't feel like it really went together, and it just wasn't one of my favorite episodes. I know on an earlier podcast, I said I really liked, you know, an Eccles Family Christmas, and I said Mac is one of my favorite characters, which she is, and just, like, in two episodes, like, I love her. You know, I love her interactions with the different characters, but it just felt really out of place, maybe because they were focusing more on Keith and how he interacted with Sheriff Lamb in the department, and how the focus wasn't all on Veronica. But I agree with Caitlin. It did seem a little disjointed.
Yeah, good point, Caitlin. I didn't really see that until you pointed it out. But the Mac case and the E-String Killer cases did not tie together very well. And it's just very strange to me that Mac comes back in this specific episode when it feels like there could have been more of a tie that they could have worked in with, you know, the biological parents thing with that Veronica has going on, but it didn't. So that's a good way I think they could have tied in Papa Mars to Mac's story. Unfortunately, they didn't.
Yeah, I never thought of that. I agree. It was really disjointed. I mean, this has never been one of my favorite episodes. I mean, I like it because there's more Mac and we get Leo. But yeah, I never really thought of it that way, but I can definitely see where you're coming from.
At the end of the day, though, it's just relieving to actually see a side character come back, like Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming Leo, because I feel like he wouldn't be getting this much love from our super fans if he was just in this one episode. That's just all I'm saying. And I think as long as I'm predicting boyfriends, I'm going to say yes, boyfriend for Veronica in the future, maybe a season down, but he's not going to be a sleazeball like Troy. I seem to predict Troy pretty well, so that's what I'm saying for Leo. She has to be 18, though, for him to really go for her.
Hopefully.
No comment.
No comment indeed. Very good, very good. Good girl. Hey, so yeah, they went to the 09er party of Madison St. Clair. And Veronica's, it makes a really good point. Last time I went here, I was roofied and ridiculed and lost my underwear. And I was like, oh, poor girl. I feel bad. But Wallace was really excited. He could sit there and talk to Madison all day about, you know, how they were supposed to be invited to the party because of such and such. That was cute. Wallace was adorable in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Wallace is always adorable.
Really,
yeah,
is.
So much.
Agreed.
I'm glad he gets the focus that he does in every episode because he really does deserve it.
He does, yeah.
Mm.
But I think it's really interesting that they did choose like the baby switching for Mac, and that kind of they switched it with a complete opposite. Like the two families had complete opposite dynamics and like values almost. And the kids are obviously complete opposite. So I thought it was really interesting how she was switched with Madison St. Clair, and you can kind of see
their physical attributes made it pretty obvious too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was almost that rubbing was it in her good. Face, wasn't it? When they were just like, this family's blonde, this family's brunette.
I thought it was really interesting, though, because Madison's family is like, Madison is not like her biological family or like her adoptive family at all.
Good point.
Agreed.
Because both families are amicable.
Yeah. I mean, no, go ahead, Gabrielle.
I was just going to say, like, yes, Mac knows that she was switched, but I'm sure Madison, I don't really think she knows at this point, but I think she feels out of place in her family. And so maybe she just acts out, and she, I mean, I thought she was a spoiled brat in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she's like that because she doesn't really feel comfortable, you know, like maybe she just thinks like, why aren't I like Lauren, you know, her younger sister? Why isn't she exactly like her parents? And she just acts out and demands, you know, people singing happy birthday to her in the quad and all that stuff.
Oh, what was the book that Lauren was reading? Madison's adopted young sister, I suppose.
Oh.
It might have had significance to our story. That's why I wanted to dig into that a little bit deeper. Do you guys remember?
I do not, but I will look it up really quickly.
Yeah, because I'm interested to see if it's something like that plot might lead on to something else in Veronica Mars, or maybe it related more to the episode that we were in, too. It was cute to see little Lauren all in her library, and I could relate to that, because who hasn't had older siblings holding a party, and they're like, shove their little siblings into the bedroom or something so they can just enjoy and not have to deal with the little kid. And she was so good about it, too. Lauren was just like, I'm just here because it's a big girl party, and I'm just, like, 12.
She was a very endearing little girl. Like, she was really interesting to just see, or like just watch, listen to what she had to say.
Yeah, I agree. It was just really ironic how much more authentic and educated she came off as compared to her adopted sister, you know?
Yeah.
It was just really nice to see that there was still hope for Mac and that connection too, because I think that Lauren's going to have to become more interested in why Mac was coming around so much. And I think the mother's going to have something more to do with that too, ever since that departure scene where she had her hand up against the van and she was so feeling sad for her daughter. It was very sad. It was very sad. But Mac seemed to accept her new family at that, though, so the storyline could die. Mac said, where are we going, guys? And she was excited to go on her trip. So maybe that was just all Mac needed. She needed to know her biological mother knew she existed, and that was it, you know?
Yeah.
If there was more need to hit it over the head with Veronica's paternity story. Not very subtle.
Oh, God. Okay, so I looked up what Lauren was reading. And according to IMDb, Lauren says she's reading The Westing Game. And according to this like trivia thing, it was a real young adult novel by Ellen Raskin. And the plot revolves around a teenage girl who solves a complicated murder mystery involving a large group of possible suspects.
I called it.
Yeah.
I called it.
Veronica Mars.
That's not even just like the show. That's this also this episode. It's the serial killer episode.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
Isn't that fabulous? Yeah. The Westing Game. There was a girl named Myrtle in that. I remember thinking she was always like a turtle. Anyways. I wonder who was Myrtle in this episode of Veronica Mars. I wonder if this episode was supposed to be based off of that or more like Silence of the Lambs. It's maybe a good mix of both, because that is an excellent piece of literature and film, Silence of the Lambs. Have you guys ever seen that movie?
Unfortunately, no.
No one here.
I feel like I should.
Oh, I'm so shocked that no one here has seen that.
Yeah.
Oh, you have Caitlin, so you can relate to how fabulous it is and how well it ties in with the neuroticism of Gabe and Hannibal Lecter, right?
Sure. It's been years since I've seen it, so.
Very. I thought it was a cool connection. I'm happy that this episode had that name, because that is an amazing piece of culture. It really is. That movie has so many good accolades to go along with it, as in, oh, I like to say it's the only movie that's a horror movie that won all major 6 Oscars, and that the guy who plays Hannibal Lecter only had like 11 minutes of screen time, but he won Best Actor or something for that year, which is amazing, you know. So that it's really nice how it relates to this episode of Veronica Mars, because if you liked this whole serial killer find out who done it, you'd like the whole feeling of Silence of the Lambs. So it was a very astutely named episode,
just with less cannibalism.
just a little bit less.
What's that line about eating his liver with lima beans or something?
Nice Chianti and fava beans.
Oh, it's so twisted, so crazy. Yeah. So that seems like that's everything for this episode. I think we've hit the nail on every head of this one, right?
I think so. I mean, I don't think there was too much going on besides like the two individual cases.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
So is everybody good with moving on to favorite scenes and favorite lines?
Absolutely.
Sounds good.
All right. So favorite scenes, I'll start because we're on the whole Mac, riding the Mac wave. But my favorite scene was the end where she and her mother were at the mother's car and they were like sort of touching hands through the window. I don't know. It gets me every time. It's sad. I don't know.
Oh, it
it's
was sad, very touching.
You feel bad for Mac, but at the same time, you can see like she's feeling better. I don't know. I think it's a really great image.
Yeah. I choke up every time.
Mm-hmm. I just want to know from you super fans if we see that mother again. I just want more. There wasn't enough for me. I need to see Mac be happy in life. I need to know if she really was happy or she was just complying with her new parents. Ah.
Well, now you're asking two different questions. You're asking if we see the mother and you're asking if Mac is happy.
Oh. Oh, good point. All right. But I'd expect a no comment. Don't tell me.
No.
Nope. No comment.
No comment, indeed.
Okay. Caitlin, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was when Weevil came to the police department to stall so Veronica could look for the tape. And he's like, he was so funny. And I just love everything about their friendship and how unexpected Veronica and Weevil are together. And then he just comes and does her these favors. He was just hilarious. Like, he will not expect my vote this year. Oh, it was so great. I just was cracking up.
Yeah, he was just so damn formal about it.
Oh, I love it.
He's great. So yes, Weevil. More Weevil, please.
More Weevil.
All the Weevil.
Gabrielle, your favorite scene?
So mine was similar to Danielle's. I really liked it when Mac, Veronica, and Wallace crashed Madison's birthday party. And specifically when Mac is talking to Lauren, and you can kind of see her forlorn, like sad, you know, look going on. And I always choke up during that scene. So I just felt bad for Mac and bad for Lauren, who was missing out on this connection with, you know, her sister.
Yeah, it's going to be great though when my future predicting comes inevitably true and we have Mac and Lauren together again. So I suppose I'll go on to my favorite scene, which was when Gabe's introduction happens in the guitar shop and he's playing his music so loud, and then Papa Mars and Officer Lamb, Sheriff Lamb, are just like, can you turn that noise off? He's like, this isn't noise. This is beautiful music and all this. And then they're just like, close the door unless you want to do this down at the station. He's like, okay. What does he say? And he's like talking about like rock stars are heroes of today's age. It was just so like hipster. He's like hipster of the early 2000s.
He was just strange.
Yeah, he was very odd, as he should have been. I mean, he was a serial killer.
That's true. Yeah. I guess.
Mm. Let's not have more Gabe. I'd rather be done with him.
Oh, goodness. I guess no comment.
All right, that's fine. Oh, God, don't do that no comment to me. Oh, I think a better no comment would have been silence, as opposed to no comment.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I didn't throw around any no comments last time, so I have to get some of them in this time.
It's a quota we have to meet for each episode of Rewatchable. The super fans have to always no comment us. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's cute.
All right. Favorite lines. So mine goes with Gabrielle's favorite scene. When Wallace, Mac, and Veronica walk up to Madison Sinclair's house and she opens the door, Wallace goes, I just came to celebrate your birth, but these two just want to hook up.
Yeah.
And that was one of my favorite lines in this whole thing. It was great.
Cute little baby Wallace. No squidgy cheeks.
So Caitlin, favorite line.
Mine was from Mac after they've crashed the party and she's bemoaning how Madison's lifestyle is wasted on her, and she says she wouldn't know Monet's water lilies unless Revlon named a nail polish after it.
That was cute.
Zing!
It shows the difference in art and culture between the two families.
Huh?
So it shows the difference of art and culture between the two families.
Oh, yeah.
And where Mac gets that in her genes, perhaps, because that's where her family seems to come more from. Her biological family, I should say. Her biological parents.
Her biological. Mm-hmm. Gabrielle?
Yeah, and then mine involves Sheriff Lamb, who, even though he is kind of a jerk in the episodes we've seen him. I just think he's funny. I think he's inappropriate with Veronica, but he's just witty, which I appreciate. I mean, I feel like all the characters on the show are. But when he says, "Veronica Mars, is your daddy here or is he busy peeking in people's windows?" And Veronica says, very smartly and quickly, of course, "You stop dressing up like little Bo Peep, he'll stop peeking." I just thought it was funny, witty, and it just put him down and, of course, referenced his last name, which, you know, of course, you can make 1,000 jokes out of.
Mm-hmm. That's why this whole episode, I thought that his name really wasn't Lamb. She was just calling him that because that little Bo Peep comment or something.
No.
Pretty ironic.
Yep.
So mine is when Keith says, "You don't go to the Oceanside bars that those kids hang out at, do you?" And Veronica just says back, "I prefer the biker bar of the train station. I get more attention there." She's so sassy. And okay, the reason I put this in was very specifically because I was literally just at an Oceanside bar this past weekend. And it wasn't sketchy at all, but I felt a little bit unnerved that there were all these murders going on there in the Veronica Mars world when I was literally just there singing karaoke the other night. I was like, blah. Creepity jeebities.
It's a good thing Sheriff Mars got the strangler.
It absolutely is.
All right, so let's move on to episode 12, Clash of the Tritons. And here's the quick synopsis. In this episode, Veronica is suspended after she's accused of making fake IDs, which leads to a classmate being in a coma. Veronica listens to Weevil, Logan, and Duncan's grief sessions while she goes after Neptune High's secret society, the Tritons. It turns out that the student who blamed Veronica, or accused her of making the fake IDs, was the person at fault for the fake IDs and had nothing to do with the Tritons. At the end of the episode, Logan's life is changed forever when his mother, Lynn, presumably commits suicide.
No.
Yeah.
I just feel like I want to jump into the points that we talk about last in our synopsis, because they're usually like the big episode-ending things, and I'm just like...
Let's go for it.
It's the elephant in the room. So, yeah. Okay. Without stealing the luster from a lot of this episode, I just wanted to put it out there that I didn't care for the writing of Lynn's character committing suicide. I can understand that she felt broken and destroyed. She was on medication, so perhaps she was depressed. But the inner, I wouldn't say feminist in me, but the inner humanist in me, or someone who, you know, cares for human life, I suppose, would say that the Veronica Mars writers would think we should show someone prevailing over a scumbag like Aaron Eccles. We shouldn't show them giving in and giving up to someone that is such a tyrant, you know?
I agree, but I also think it's more real life and it shows the effects of abuse, because even though we never see Aaron Eccles hitting Lynn, we do see him hitting Logan, and we do see him just being really rude and cheating on his wife and just not respecting her. So I think, unfortunately, I think in some cases it's a little unrealistic for her to, like, you know, be all powerful by the end of the episode. I think they did show her trying to regain her power by selling those tabloid pictures and info, but I think it was a little more realistic than just having a TV show be, you know, have everything turn out fine like usual.
Mm. Yeah, but hey, this is going to change Logan a hell of a lot, because that threat he gave to his father was genuine. He said, "If you talk to her more like that, I'm going to kill you." He said he would kill his own father now. So there's a lot of murder and suicide going on in that family right now. I'm not really digging what's happening, because I, like most of us in this podcast, really like Logan. So let's hope that he doesn't go and grab a gun or something, because that would be bad.
I was surprised, because I would have more expected, sorry, Gabrielle, that she would have, I honestly was more expecting her to kill Aaron than kill herself.
Yes, I'd like that better.
She just seemed angry enough that she could have done it instead of doing it to herself. So I was really taken aback.
Do we think that she did, like, purposely kill herself? We know she took pills. And, you know, maybe she was she was probably under the influence. Like, maybe she wasn't thinking clearly, you know. But I just think it's really sad for Logan, because even though we don't see him interact with his mom that much, he already has kind of a messed up family life before this. And now it just, you know, and he already had to deal with Lily's death. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with another death in his life.
And he was very protective of her. So there's obviously a lot more to that relationship that we never got to see.
Or it could also I mean, yes, he was very protective, and I'm sure that they were kind of on one side of the family, because we saw how bad Aaron Eccles' anger could be. So I'm sure that Logan had a bond with his mother because he couldn't bond with his father. So with two people gone in his life now, it's definitely gonna have an effect.
I know we talked in the last episode about how it's really easy to forget that Logan's also been grieving. So mm-hmm. I get the feeling it's going to be way more front and center after this.
Yeah. Oh, I can't say anything, but that's a good theory on that one.
I think just remembering that people do grieve in different ways, and that although I think we all identify with Veronica in some aspect and how she is seeking revenge for Lily's death, or at least truth and justice, you know, as we saw from the grief sessions this episode, that everyone else is dealing with it in different ways. Like Weevil is kind of fronting a bit, and Duncan is just trying to get on with life as normal, while Logan is obviously just not knowing how to process it.
And that's where we can see a lot of Logan's motivations, and I just am really interested to see his next step, because he can do a lot with all this angst he's been building up about both Lily and now his mother. So he's going to explode somewhere, and if it wasn't through his personality moments where he would get all, you know, sissy and make fun of people and make fun of, like, Weevil and the Eccles family Christmas and, you know, say racial slurs and all this to bring other people down, I don't know. He's going to probably do something a little bit more drastic and violent, unfortunately.
He has the potential to be very self-destructive, so that worries me.
Either self-destructive or outer destructive? Hurting other people. That's what I'm meaning to say.
Honestly, both. Like, he can be very, like, he is hurting himself by hurting other people, in essence.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
So, I think he has the potential to be both, actually.
And thank God he still has Duncan as a friend, because the kiss had made up at the party or before the stabbing, and that needed to happen, because who would Logan have at this point? He's has all these 09er friends who aren't genuine, but Duncan's there to tell him, dude, shut up, like, get your stuff together and stop being such a jackass to everyone. I think that he's going to be really important in getting Logan through the suicide of Logan's mother.
And my bro TP, Logan and Weevil.
Your bro TP, Logan and Weevil, absolutely. They're going. They're trucking, all right.
I think in terms of Logan and his character, I think his quick session that we saw with the guidance counselor was really telling about where his mindset is for the grieving. Like, not only is he grieving for Lily, but he also feels a certain sense of responsibility for what happened.
And yeah, that was interesting. This is his explanation for that. He said that I was off with Lily. I kissed another girl at a party, and it was a dumb little kiss, but Veronica ended up seeing it. She told Lily, and then we weren't together. Therefore, Lily was alone on the night of her murder. She was killed. And the guidance counselor jumps back in with, no, you could be dead too if you were dating her. Who knows who, what, when, or why she was killed? You could have been a part of that. So that's a really deep thing for Logan to have to deal with. I'm interested to see how Veronica is going to confront him about that, because it's weird to me that she didn't mention that before. I know I said before she's a reliable narrator, but all of a sudden she just didn't mention that she was the one that kept them apart, and that seems really big to me, you know?
I think it's definitely interesting that he blames Veronica, and I think although it's irrational, because obviously she didn't kill Lily unless, you know, we're being like punked or something, it's kind of natural in his mind because he feels like he wasn't there to protect his girlfriend or his ex-girlfriend. But I just think it's something that shows him to be more human than just this guy who's going and bashing lights all the time. I just felt sorry for him because it's like one kiss, you know, he feels like one kiss ruined his life.
It was so interesting because Veronica was just one person on a list of people that he blamed, which just felt so real to me. You know, yes, I blame Veronica, but I also blame so-and-so and so-and-so and myself. So that broke my heart.
Yep, and that's where I'm coming. Well, that's where I'm in agreement with you, Caitlin, that he's going to be very outer destructive and self-destructive to people like Veronica still. He's going to still have a strong feeling of revenge toward her, and a lot of bad stuff will happen. But in the end of the day, the best way to get over a situation like this is, I'd say, take blame where you should, but don't in situations you can't help yourself. And to clarify, yes, you did kiss another girl, and if you're saying that that was unfaithful of you, even though you weren't with Lily, that's fine. You were unfaithful. Done. But you weren't the one that bludgeoned Lily to death. You weren't the one that threw... Like, she was in that situation because life put her in that situation, or, as we'll come to discover, maybe she did do that to herself. But I don't like it that Logan still puts blame on himself for her death, because he didn't directly do it. He didn't, you know, tell
as
her...
As far as you know.
Well, yes, but I trust a lot of what he was saying to that guidance counselor, because that much of a reveal, I don't think he would have held back too much more, you know? He revealed all that he had to about that, as did many other characters. So, can we talk about Duncan and what was revealed about his whole blackout bit? Yeah, that's strange.
I think that's really strange, in that Veronica was like, what other medication is he on? And I think it's interesting that although they dated for, I think, a year or so, Veronica seems to be learning new things about Duncan every day still. And I think that's just kind of an interesting change. But do you guys think that, like, that, you know, 3-day period of blackouts for Duncan is relevant? Like, do you think they're trying to send us in a certain direction?
I think, well, I keep remembering, like, in the flashback to the night of Lily's murder, when Veronica finds Duncan, he's, like, completely blank-faced, and that seems to fit in with this. But just going by the genre that this is, I think that's a complete red herring. Like, that's, we're supposed to be, oh, that's really sketchy, and then it's not going to turn out to be relevant, I don't think.
I don't know. I think that it might have strong relevance, but I don't think, if anything, he purposely killed her. Maybe it was by accident. I don't know. I'm leaning more towards something like they were having some kind of fight, and it had something to do with the Logan, Lily, Veronica, Duncan relationships, and how that all ties together is potentially with Lily knowing that Duncan and Veronica are blood siblings, and that could have been something like, I'm gonna tell everyone, no you're not, and he could have thrown a rock. So he could have done it purposely like that, or he could have done anything, a long list of things that are accidental, you know, who knows. But if anything, I could see Logan killing her for that reason. I think Logan does know, and I think that was, that had to have been Lily's secret, not that she was with Weevil, but that she was savvy to the siblings that were dating each other, you know?
You think Logan or Duncan? Sorry.
I think Lily knew that Veronica and Duncan were siblings, and that was her, I got a secret, at the car wash. Sorry if I interchanged Duncan and Logan. I sometimes do that. I don't know.
No, it's fine.
You guys would have got what I meant. Veronica and Duncan were dating. Yes. Okay.
Right. I mean, I think Lily was privy just because of her reaction. I don't remember what episode it was, but when Veronica in the flashback asked Lily to find out what was going on with Duncan, and then Lily was like, oh, I'm sure it's fine. It's probably okay. It's probably something stupid. And the next day she came back and said, like, just drop it. I think that's when she would have been made privy. I don't think that she would have gloated over that fact in front of Veronica, because Veronica was her best friend.
Yeah, but she was a pretty cynical best friend. I'm always going to do this because it relates the best to my brain, but she acts like Allie from Pretty Little Liars. I wonder why people were friends with her in both shows, because they were so cynical and manipulative, and they seemed like they really didn't have too many good things to share with people. They only cared about secrets and deceiving. It was kind of disturbing that someone like Veronica, as intelligent and as driven as she is, would be dragged down by someone as negative and as insidious as Lily. I go as far as to call her insidious. I know a lot of people our Marshmallow Town of Neptune are still excited to see her partying in that memorial video and all this, but I don't like Lily. I really haven't from, flashback one. I think that she is a very untrustworthy character who didn't care for her friends and family. I really don't think she did.
All right, then any last words about Duncan before we move on to the last person who is in the office, in the guidance counselor's office?
Yeah, I think that Weevil, is that who you're talking about, Daniel?
Yeah, I was going to move on to that. So if you want to start that, go right ahead.
Okay, I think that we kind of already knew that Weevil had something with Lily, because a couple episodes back when he and Duncan, or he and Logan were in detention, it was, you know, kind of hinted at. But I thought it was more interesting Lily's reaction as the guidance counselor told it, the fact that she wanted to switch out of a class with him. I just thought, you know, beforehand Weevil's sweet and he obviously liked her and maybe they had a thing, but hearing about Lily's reaction made me wonder, not so much is she a bad person, but more like how intense was he in his feelings for her, and was she a bit scared of that?
Oh, yeah, that's strange, and it harkens back to Paris Hilton, because she basically used the O-Niners to get rid of her boyfriend who seemed to attach to her, and maybe that's something that Lily did to Weevil, but she didn't, you know, get a gang to, you know, go and beat up her boyfriend. She just broke his heart in a horrible way and got out of his class and shut him out. So I wonder what pushed Lily to that level. Is that what you were saying, Gabrielle?
Yeah, to the point, but I mean, I don't know. I kind of, going off of what you said earlier, Mitch, about you not liking Lily, I don't dislike her at this point. I just think she was a teenage girl who could be kind of stupid at times, but as a, you know, former, as someone who used to be a teenage girl, I identify with that. so I just think I'm more on her side, I guess, that if someone wants to switch out of a class because someone's upsetting her, then maybe there's something else going on there.
But he seemed so genuine in the guidance counselor's office. I don't see why he wouldn't tell even the vice principal and the guidance counselor the truth. But maybe it was something illegal that he did that scared her off, and that's why he can't say it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it makes you think that, or it kind of goes back to that episode with Paris Hilton. You can see how much, I think it was Chardo, fell for Paris Hilton and how intense he was. And you can kind of see a little bit of that in Weevil, which is strange, because if she wanted to switch out of the class that badly, he must have really kind of pushed her to be in a relationship, or like was trying to really make it go forward, and she wasn't having it. So I think that's an interesting parallel between the two. Because we saw Chardo as this bad guy, but here's Weevil, a character we have grown to love and who is part of a bro TP. But like, this girl is trying to get away from him. So,
Paris Hilton's character was really very different, I think, in that she was very much leading Chardo on, and it doesn't sound like Lily was probably doing that.
That's true. All right, any last words on the guidance counselor sessions?
It's funny that Veronica was so sly about switching out those staplers. She knew the exact brand and everything, and she knew, of course, as a junior PI, how to find a long-lasting battery recorder that could transmit over to a radio station, you know. So it was cute when she was just sitting in her covered up car when she was suspended and stuff. So we have a lot to talk about with her being suspended. That's a whole nother side of this episode, and it feels like the guidance counselor part was like a mini series as opposed to the main storyline in this episode, didn't it?
It did. I think it was one of those things where it's transparent as to why they put it in there, like for character development or to kind of move the story along a little bit quicker than they could otherwise. But it is very important to obviously character development and other things that are going to be happening in the rest of the season. But yeah, so we only get a few seconds or a few minutes with the guidance counselor, but it's also
those moments are gold. And do you guys watch One Tree Hill? Because
yes,
I'm going to say season two, when they're all doing their confessions for the time capsule and they reveal so much. It's like those golden moments, like Teen Wolf, when we also have parent-teacher conferences in season one, and there are still things revealed in season one that haven't been answered in season three. So I'm not expecting in Teen Wolf from those parent-teacher conferences. So I'm assuming that a lot of these things are brought up in Veronica Mars won't be answered for a while, because usually when things are planted like that in characters, they're meant to grow and reach over many different seasons, not just be answered, you know, the next episode. So I'm excited to see all these new layers added in. It makes me so happy that I'm watching a show that takes heed from shows like, you know, One Tree Hill or whatever else would do that.
Yeah, but let's move on from the grief sessions and move into that, I guess, crime of the week or whatever we're calling it.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
So one question is, why Veronica? Like, she's not really involved with it at all, and then she gets sucked in. So how does Keith's work and what he does and his reputation affect Veronica? Like, we kind of see a little bit more of that in this episode.
I think it shapes who she is as a person. I think he's a private detective. She's a wannabe private detective. He believed that Abel Koontz didn't do it, or he, you know, and Veronica believes that. So I think she really idolizes her father in a lot of ways, and she keeps stuff hidden from him to keep up her image with him and to keep his view of her as his little girl. And I think the whole reason that Rick did that whole Triton scam and blaming Veronica for the fake IDs was because of Keith, as he reveals in the end of the episode. So she's going to stick by her dad no matter what, but her dad, although he is a stand-up guy, you know, his reputation or his actions do affect her in a big way.
Right, but it's his job. And like I was talking about with him being a cop, he wouldn't have a choice if that was the law. So, I mean, as a PI, he has a little bit more of a choice, but that seemed kind of like a humdrum kind of job that he would get any other day to expose something financially about someone, you know, embezzling money or something to that effect, whatever was going on with Rick's parents. And I understand that Rick was upset about it, but it's just kind of a lesson to Veronica that she's going to go into the world of PI where you're going to hurt people, but it's your job to. You give out that information because you don't hold moral standards. You are robotic in many ways, and that's it. You find the information, you give it. Done. Which is hard. That's just like, that's like the large theme of the show. Can Veronica say and do all these bad things to people like Mac and whoever else she's doing her episode of the week for and ruin their lives if she's the one that's privy to their information, you know?
Well, I know, and in the last episode, we talked a little bit about how we don't think Keith maybe wants to see that side of Veronica. Like, he's mm-hmm. aware that it's there, but just doesn't want to see it. And this sort of thing brings it front and center and doesn't let him be blind to it anymore. So it's interesting that there was that blindness maybe before, and now it's been front and center for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So it was a lie then when we saw that flashback where Rick got the note from, quote, the principal's office, but it was really a Triton that said, blame Veronica Mars, right? That wasn't what really happened. That's just what he fabricated to make it look like he didn't do what he did. He didn't create the fake IDs.
Right.
Correct. He kind of wrote that. I took it as he wrote that in case he needed evidence for it.
Yeah,
I
definitely. I don't
know, but either that or it didn't happen at all.
And who else called that? There was a little hole in the ceiling of the bottom locker for 110, right? I mean, that was pretty obvious.
I didn't think so.
No?
My first time around.
Whoever was doing it had to be smart enough to know that someone might do what Veronica was doing. Therefore, why wasn't Veronica a step ahead? Why wasn't she filming both lockers, you know? Come on, zoom in a little bit more, girl. You would have caught him a lot longer ago.
I've seen enough stories with where that's a plot device where it's like, well, of course they did.
Yeah, like I've seen enough Scooby-Doo episodes where there's the hidden bookcase, you know what I mean? Open up the book, pull the book back, and the hidden layer comes through or something. It's a lot to that, so I'm a little bit jaded when it comes to mysteries. I grew up in Scooby-Doo, I'll admit it.
To go back to that note that Rick said he had gotten, he blamed it on the Tritons. From this episode, what do we think of the Triton Society? Was it a little too much for a high school, or just thoughts in general?
Such a frat thing. Like, yeah. Really, we're going to do that in high school? Like, that's a little much.
But it gifted a lot of funny scenes to us. I'm just going to go karaoke, and I'm sure everyone's going to know what I'm talking about. One way or another. I was like, yes!
Thank you for that singing example. I think it was beautiful. But I did like how the Tritons, they were kind of silly, like how Duncan was talking in, you know, nonsense speak. It just showed a little bit of a silly side to him, which I was glad to see, because we've just seen him be sad or be kind of complacent or just not show any emotion. So it was nice to see that side.
Yeah, it was. And it was funny when he was saying things like, what is it, the typical phrase to type out every letter on a keyboard, the brown fox, someone else knows it, I'm sure, jumped over the log.
Over the lazy dog.
The brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. It types out all the keys. And I was just like, you're so cute to think of that to say gibberish, you know? Yeah, and it was fun to see him funny. Like you guys were saying in the episode that we were just talking about, the Eccles family, the Eccles Christmas episode where he's acting drunk, that gave him personality. This is another episode where we finally see his personality. We see him singing basically summer nights or whatever from Greece that he did in that one episode again. These little tiny peeks into Duncan's personality make me actually see that he's not a robot and he's not as vacant as I thought he was after Lily's death.
Yeah.
But hey, he's off his meds. He reveals that. He's done with his meds.
Yeah, that was my question, actually. I just had a quick question about that because I was watching it this time and I was a little confused. So he says in the counselor's office that he's off of his antidepressant medication, yet there was such a big deal made out of him taking the pills again at the end of whatever episode that was, the Duncan-centric drug episode.
Mm-hmm. Where he was putting the pills down the garbage disposal.
Right. Just like inconsistency, should we chalk it up to? Because I'm not sure.
I would say it is an inconsistency because they don't explain for why he once again decides to go off his pills. So I'm not sure. Maybe we'll learn why in a future episode, but right now it just seems kind of strange and just off canon or kind of a mistake by the writers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was off canon because I think that he did that off camera. I thought that was that hint that he had moved on and that enough time had passed that he was able to get off his antidepressants. But the big mystery, of course, is what mystery medication he's on now for whatever mental illness he might have. So that ties in, I guess, to his blackouts. And that's going to be fun to see Veronica look into that because it's going to be cool to see her trying to discover something about someone so close to her or that used to be so close to her.
But do we think that medical information shouldn't be explored? Like, do we think that, I mean, obviously we know Veronica and we know that she's going to want to find out what's going on, but I mean, it's his medical history. It's his personal, you know.
Oh, for God, she's not going to stop. She's going to go for it. And I don't know. It's not right. it's Veronica, though. I've come to accept that she is a very immoral person when it comes to discovering information that's very private about people.
I guess we'll find out.
And a quick question just about, you know, who everyone teases me about, Logan. Were you guys surprised to see that Duncan was in the society and not Logan? Or do you think Logan isn't a student?
That was my first thought, too. What do you mean Logan's not, too? I thought the exact same thing. Because they said it was everybody who's anybody was in that society. I'm like, we have seen that Logan is somebody, so.
Oh, God, but I don't know if he is anymore. Think of the divorce. Everyone probably thinks his family name in shame now with all the things that Logan's mother is revealing about the family in tabloids this episode. So that's, maybe this is supposed to demonstrate his fall, yeah?
They didn't get divorced. Eccles went to Keith and, you know, wanted him to find out who was doing the tabloids because Lynn was so upset. So they were still together, I think. But I just think if Logan's like the most popular guy in school and the head of the O-Niners, why isn't he in this high society? Mm. But I guess if it's organized by a guy who's going to MIT, maybe it's just not his place.
That was cool how he was dropped in the guidance counselor's office waiting line. He was just sitting there and Veronica's like, MIT, huh? You're not gonna miss this place, are you? And then it turns out that he's the big bad, you know.
In the chessboard, I was rolling my eyes at how,
oh my God,
stereotypical that was. Like, seriously, you're even putting a chessboard there?
And how impractical. How can you really play chess with like a 10-minute wait, you know? Against yourself. I don't know. Yeah, it was very stereotypical. I agree, Caitlin.
It was. And I honestly, until you just asked that question, I never thought twice about Logan not being in the society. I don't know why. I think I was surprised that I only knew one of the people that was in the society, and that was Duncan, and then I guess the chess guy. But I never even thought about Logan. I just separate him, I think, from the school stuff for some reason, because we see so much of his home life all the time. I'm not sure.
So while we're still on the topic of the frat, and we know that it was Rick who was making those fake IDs, set up Veronica, and was leading her all these wrong paths, right? I wanted to discuss his relationship with the unseen character that I don't remember the name of, but the one in the hospital that was in a coma after he couldn't pass the 12 trials. So that relationship seemed homoerotic to me, because the way that Rick was reacting, he wasn't acting like he was a best friend. He acted like he was a lover. I expected a reveal for it to be that way. I expected the end of the episode to be Rick saying, "I'm sorry, I was doing this because I loved whoever's in the hospital." You know what I mean? Did anyone else see that, or am I just making it up?
No, I mean, I didn't think of it like that at first, but now that you say that, I definitely think, I definitely agree. I think it was a little suspect, and it was just like, okay, well, yes, you would hopefully take good care of a friend, but you wouldn't be this upset over just like a friend. I don't know. Right. I see what you're getting at.
It could go either way, I'd say, and that was a storyline that I wish Veronica Mars would have discovered, because that would have made more sense to see Rick's motivations going that far for someone he loved that much. Because for him to do this much just to kind of protect the name of him and his best friend didn't make as much sense as it would have for a lover, you know? Unless they're like childhood best friends from forever ago, but who knows?
Yeah, that's true. I never thought about that before, but that's a good take on it.
And if Rick was the one that was left alone to deal with him, that would make sense, too.
Yeah, exactly. He was also, he was just bar hopping with this one guy, too. And I was just like, oh, that seems like it's hinting at something romantic. And just the way he had this forlonged face when he was like, "Their family is threatening to sue me." It just felt like a lover's quarrel. It really did. Like Romeo and Juliet family deal. I really felt more there, but I'm sad that there wasn't. I really am, because it would have not only pleased the inner fangirl in me, but it also would have been a stronger inclination to why he was doing all that he was doing. But yeah, Rick, you're not a good guy.
No, Rick, you are not a good guy.
Where is Rick? Is Rick in jail nowadays? Is he? We don't know how old he is, but I'm assuming that that's a big felony. Especially since he was accusing, leading it so that someone else was doing all these fake IDs. So I feel like he got a bigger punishment than Veronica's proposed one was.
Probably. I would think so, because he'd be lying to the police on top of everything else.
Yeah, he's probably not going to be staying at the high school. Let's put that much out there. And and anyone else wondering about his friend, if his friend ever got out of the coma and if the family ever sued, because Rick just has a whole bunch of the shiitake to deal with him nowadays. He's really made a mess of his life.
I don't know. I always assumed that the friend got out of the coma, I think. Did they not say anything in the episode?
Mm-mm. They left it just as open as they... No, go ahead.
They said he was getting better. So, you know, we assume the best, obviously.
So then I would assume there would be no lawsuit after that.
Overall, shouldn't have Rick just gotten in trouble at the beginning because he dumped his friend at the hospital? He seemed like he wasn't going to be dealing with jail time immediately from that. But, I mean, there was that lawsuit that the coma friend's family was going to do. So was that his punishment originally?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I think so, yeah. Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that's the legal jargon for rewatchable. Hope you enjoyed that.
Yep. And so since we are halfway done with the first season, let's kind of regroup and take a step back with the big picture and main theories. Like the first one, are there any changes in theories on who killed Lily for you newbies?
I gave mine for Duncan. That's the best I can pull out of my donkey right now.
All right.
I'm leaning towards Jake Kane at the moment.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Why?
Like, I don't know, just if it's hard. I just don't buy Duncan because I think that's too obvious and it's a mystery genre and the obvious is never the answer. So, and I, with this latest information of seeing Keith Mars being as good as he is at his job and this paternity drama and what Lily could have possibly done with it. He's sort of like, I don't really think he did it, honestly, but he's kind of at the top of my list of, I don't really buy anyone else at this point. So I guess it's like, I think he's the most of the least likelies to have done it, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes sense. I mean, like I said, we're only halfway, so I feel like it hasn't picked up yet, so that totally
makes
sense.
You just revealed a lot there. You said that we're going to find out what's happening in the season then. I could have expected that, though.
I feel like that's not a spoiler.
It's not a spoiler. It's really not.
I mean, just how regular seasons
are. I agree with Danielle. Danielle, you're good.
No, you're good, girl. You're good, girl. No, I'm just yanking your chain. Wow. So that differentiates this show a lot from Pretty Little Liars, doesn't it?
Cool. I wouldn't know.
Because that show arcs over 5 seasons right now about finding out who killed the old best friend. But this show will have different storylines. So that makes a little bit more sense about how season 3 isn't going to be the best season, because if you can reinvent something that's not as good, then that is basically a new show at that point.
So moving on from that theory, do you guys like the characters? You kind of know who Danielle and I like and what we think of the characters, but Mitch and Caitlin, do you guys like Veronica and Keith? Do you like the Mars family?
I do, but Caitlin, can we just bro TP? Can we just stick with that?
I'm all about the bro TP.
I'm more bro TP than anything.
They're the highlight of the show for me.
Weevil Logan is definitely bro TP. That's it. That's all you need. Oh, and let's not forget Wallace. I think that trifecta. That completes
great.
It for me. It really does.
Because
they're like the underdogs that we don't know as much about, and we're getting to learn more about, but they're fun to learn about, too.
How do you see Wallace and his friendship with Veronica? Like, in, I think it was this episode, like, he was talking to Veronica and she was just not listening at all.
Oh, he was doing more than that. He was flirting with her at one point and he was blown off by her. He was joking, but...
Yeah, but, like, how do you see their friendship?
I think she uses him a little too much. Yeah. When he's not getting a lot in return. Like, they do have a reciprocal relationship, but I feel like she's using him and getting more from that than he is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think in this episode, obviously she's suspended, so she can't go on school grounds, or she does anyway, but she uses him to put the money in the locker, and she doesn't really say thanks or, you know, hey, I'm going to make you, you know, let's hang out today after you do this. Like, thank you so much. It's more like, here, do my PI work for me.
Yeah. Oh, when she's always just like, oh, hey, Wallace, are you still in the office? I need you to check up on, actually just creep and steal someone's home address.
Yeah, pretty much all the time. So, yeah, I agree. That's
unstoppable Kim Possible, though, guys. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. They're going to hook up in the end. I'm not going to be happy about it, but we all knew it was coming because they are the OTP of Veronica Mars. Or maybe people would say, Duncan Veronica is the OTP, but I don't think so after whatever is going to be revealed about Duncan. If my theory is correct, he could have something to do with her murder, so that could really alienate Veronica from him. Oh, and also there could be siblings too, so that kind of ruins that.
yeah, there's a little bit of that too.
I can't wait to find out for real. God, I was so freaking angry when she decided to shred that. It's going to solve a lot of things. It's going to help out our ships. It's going to help out our characters developing. And
ships.
I'm shipping hardcore. My bro TP.
Save the ships.
You got to save the ships. You have to give me my Wallace Veronica. If you're going to do it, go all the way, guys. Come on. Stop fooling around with us. Stop giving us these half flirty scenes where she's flashing him her sports bra. So, yeah. Bro TP, okay. Caitlin. That's where we and you are going to stick through that.
All the way.
All the way. Let's do it. Oh, that's cute.
All right. Anything else we want to recap or make theories about for the first half of the season? We're pretty much.
Reiterate good. Clarence. Yeah, he's cool. I'm going to see some fun, real PI versus spy action with him and Veronica. I know I'm going to. It's going to be fun.
All right.
That was a good no comment. That was a great no comment.
It was a blank space. You can leave that. You can leave that.
You underscored. Yeah. underscore. That's cute. All right.
Let's then move into favorite scenes and lines from the episode. We kind of nailed this multiple times, but my favorite scene was Logan's revelation about Veronica and just his time with the counselor in general. I just thought it was really, you got to see a lot more of Logan's character, more than we've been getting. And that says a lot because we've been getting a lot lately. So,
yeah. And the show knows that we love him.
Yes, they do. They know very well.
He's so sweet. Deep down. Marshmallow.
Caitlin, favorite scene?
Mine was at the very end when Veronica just flops down in the sheriff's office and starts flipping through the magazines, like making the deal with the sheriff that the real crook's going to come in. She's just flipping through the magazine, making herself at home, and he is so frustrated with her. It's so great.
What was it? Men's legs will turn to jelly? With the way I walk, and I'll walk into that court with this new walk if you can prove I did it. Oh, I was like, yeah, you work it, girl.
Pretty funny. So mine also had to do with Veronica, and this is when she was singing One Way or Another, as Mitch demonstrated for us earlier. When she was singing that, one, I love that song, and two, she was just so cute about it, and for a second, she was almost like a regular teenage girl at a karaoke bar. And it was a nice, sweet moment. Also, Wallace was cheering her on, which, you know, how can you not love?
It's impossible to not love.
For real, for real. So mine was another Wallace-Veronica moment where she runs to her car with the top down after she takes the picture. I love it. I was like, I want to do that. That looks like Indiana Jones. It was so cool.
She, like, didn't hesitate. She just kept running.
Yep, she's like, impressive. She's like, gun it, Wallace.
Gotta make a getaway.
So adorable.
Veronica Mars, action hero.
And he's like, did you see all that rubber I burnt? So cute. Love it. Perfect.
Okay. Favorite lines. Mine was during Caitlin's favorite scene, once, what's his name? Rick walks in and Sheriff Lamb is reading the dollar bill. And it says, Veronica Mars is smarter than me. And she just goes, oh, you stop it.
She's like, oh, you. Cute.
So great.
My favorite line was when Veronica gets the fake ID that they had paid for. And she says, this is a $250 piece of crap. Now I'm not just falsely accused. I'm genuinely offended. Like, if you're going to accuse me for something, at least make it good. Jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, for real.
And then mine was a Veronica Keith moment when she lets him know that she's suspended. And she goes, hi, Dad. Their case is fuzzy and circumstantial. And Keith goes, you know the odd thing? Those were also her first words. I just thought that was cute. And I love the relationship between Keith and Veronica. So it just showed that off perfectly.
That was adorable. But I have a question. Was that her saying, well, that was her trying to make up a reason for that lawyer being in that office, right? Or what was that?
No, that, I mean, I think.
Oh, that was her defending herself. Like, don't worry, the people who got me suspended have fuzzy and circumstantial evidence against me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I get it now. Yeah. All right. So mine was a very cute Veronica moment where she's taking a picture of the Tritons as they are unveiled. And she says, say repressed homosexuality.
That was great.
They're like, oh my God. The MIT guy's just like, my scholarship.
I gotta get out of here, man.
Cute. Very fun.
All right. Well, before we say goodbye, let's do a few listener feedback comments that we had gotten. Gabrielle, you want to start?
Sure. So this was on the article on Hypable. And this was from Monica, who just let us know that the episode Silence of the Lamb and the episode in Eccles Family Christmas were actually supposed to be switched in order. So I just thought that was an interesting fact. And she said that if it was in the order it was supposed to be in Eccles Family Christmas would have aired after Christmas when it actually was airing on television, which is why the order was switched. Because obviously it's awkward to have a Christmas episode air in like mid-January. Mm-hmm. And she ends it off with saying, anyway, can't wait until next week. And thank you for listening, Monica. We really appreciate it.
Cool. So mine was relating to a tweet I sent out, which was about what was happening with the guy who plays Aaron Samuels in Mean Girls, that actor, in his Kool-Aid episode. So Daniel Stewart on the Hypeable post for last episode wrote, bring back the guy to this, the discussion next episode. The ending to drinking the Kool-Aid was unnerving and unsatisfying. I'm not sure if they were talking about bring back Mitch to the next rewatchable or bring back Aaron Samuels. I thought it was at first. I know, me too. I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm flattered. No, they were talking about how it was unsolved, and Danielle gave a great insight as to what was happening.
With, like, the deep programming?
Mm, yeah. You told me it was something about him not... Yeah. It was them not winning. It was Veronica not solving an issue like she wanted to.
Yeah.
I don't think there's too much more.
Yeah, and I agree. It was definitely unnerving and unsatisfying. Those are two really good descriptions of that.
It's sad, but I don't agree that you guys were saying he was completely deprogrammed, and I think that we will see him again, because I remember one of you saying that in the last episode of Rewatchable, so I'm interested to see how he's going to act in the future. So we'll continue this discussion in a little bit, Daniel. Don't worry.
Okay. And then I just wanted to throw out a fun fact that one of our listeners, Laura Jurgensmeyer, she wrote on our Hypeable post. She said, fun fact, Harry Hamlin and Lisa Rinna, who play Aaron and Lynn Eccles, are actually married in real life.
Wow. Huh. So that must have been a really fun scene to play out.
That I did not know. So that's really interesting. I like that a lot.
Okay, elephant in the room here. Guys, elephant in the room here.
Wonder.
Is that real plastic surgery?
Oh, is that a real face?
Is that a real face? Is that a mask? Because she had a really big
top. I think it's a real face.
I think it was just like they make it maybe look
shiny, done up. Voluptuous,
yeah.
And Angelina Jolie like.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah.
Oh my God! No, I mean nothing against her. I mean, work it however you do. But I was just curious. I was like, that's either a really good makeup job or that's authentic.
No, if you see her like in other things, like her face looks like that.
Oh, all right. So, mystery solved. Thanks, Veronica.
All right. Okay, so if you have any questions, comments, anything you agree or disagree with us about, please feel free to contact us. Our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us @re_watchable. You can comment on our podcast posts on Hypeable. I know I'm always looking at them. I think other people are too. So we are more than happy to talk to you. Or if you want to find us on our personal Twitters, we're happy to talk to you too. I know I actually had someone tweet me last night about Courtney Draper. We were talking about Courtney Draper last episode, and they were really excited. So they wanted to share in my excitement with me. So personal tweets to our Rewatchable account, everything. Just please talk to us. We'd love to talk back to you.
Good fun.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's it. I think we're done for this week. We will see you next time with the next two episodes. I'm so excited to go watch them.
It's been a while.
So.
Well, you've already seen them, so you're not as cliffhangered as I am right now. I'm just like, Logan, my heart's pining.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then we will not, without further ado then, so you can get to those. I'm Danielle.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Gabrielle.
I'm Mitch.
And we will see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.